Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Campus Activewear Limited Q4 and FY 2022 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Before we proceed on this call, let me remind you that the discussion may contain forward-looking statements that may involve known or unknown risks, uncertainties and other factors. It must be viewed in conjunction with our businesses that could cause future results, performance or achievements to differ significantly from what is expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. The Campus Activewear's management team is represented by Mr. Nikhil Aggarwal, Whole-time Director and CEO, Mr. Raman Chawla, CFO, and Mr. Piyush Singh, Chief Strategy Officer. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nikhil Aggarwal, Whole-time Director and CEO, for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Diksha. Welcome and thanks everyone for joining our quarter four and FY 2022 earnings call today. In our maiden earnings call post-listing, I would like to express my gratitude to our esteemed stakeholders for making Campus Activewear Limited one of the most oversubscribed IPO of calendar year 2022 during a challenging macro environment. We appreciate and deeply acknowledge your trust in our vision to create India's leading sports and athleisure footwear brand. We would like to take a few minutes to give you a brief overview and business dynamics of the company. Campus Activewear is India's largest sports and athleisure footwear brand in terms of value and volume, enjoying approximately 17% market share in the Indian branded sports and athleisure footwear industry. Our flagship brand, Campus, was introduced in 2005 as a lifestyle-oriented sports and athleisure brand that offers a diverse product portfolio for the entire family. The brand offers multiple choices across styles, color palettes, price points, and an attractive product value proposition. We are a pan-India brand covering over 85% of the total addressable market for sports and athleisure footwear in India. As Campus, we continuously innovate to satiate our end consumers' aspiration while being cognizant of the affordability metric and solving for the accessibility or distribution link challenges. Our USP lies in the fact that we could bring global designs, trends in color palettes adapted as per local taste to Indian market in the fastest lead time possible. This has been made possible by virtue of our highly trained research and design setup, our vertically integrated manufacturing ecosystem, and our integrated and highly indigenized supply chain, and an omnichannel sales and distribution network focused on agility and digitization. So now I'll move to highlighting our manufacturing and distribution reach. Campus Activewear owns and operates 5 manufacturing facilities across India. Installed annual capacity for assembly is pegged at 28.8 million pairs as on FY 22. The company, as of March 22, has more than 425 distributors directly servicing and fulfilling orders of over 20,000 geographically mapped retailers in more than 650 cities at a pan-India level. In addition, our expansive product portfolio has been made available through third-party pure-play marketplaces, third-party managed marketplaces, and online-to-offline B2B platforms such as Flipkart, Amazon, AJIO, Myntra, Find and Uran, among others, as well as our known e-commerce website. During FY22, we have sold more than 5.5 million pairs through online channels. The e-commerce platform sales registered an impressive year-on-year growth of over 160% during FY22. While disseminating information pertaining our fourth quarter annual FY22 business results, I'm delighted to share that Campus Activewear has delivered a consolidated revenue of more than INR 352 crores for the quarter, a year-on-year increase of 28% for the quarter, and an INR 1,194 crores for the year, an increase of 68% over FY21. Just to highlight, we sold highest ever volume in the history of Campus at 19.3 million pairs, while registering the highest ever average selling price for the company at INR 620 rupees per pair in FY22. Balance sheet demonstrates a position of strength with robust return ratios such as ROCE and ROE of 29.7% and 32.9% respectively. We are sincerely thankful to our end consumers our channel partners, and our passionate team, which have helped us in delivering this performance, which earmarks the underlying strength and resilience of the brand. As always, we thank you for your indelible support and investment. I will now hand over to our Chief Strategy Officer, Piyush Singh, for his remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikhil, and greetings, everyone. Adding on to what Nikhil just said, FY22 has been an exciting year for all our stakeholders, both from an operational and financial performance standpoint. All our distribution channels, product categories, and geographical cohorts have demonstrated robust growth, both in terms of volumes and value, amidst a challenging operating environment marred by frequent supply chain disruptions and inflationary trends. Our sales trend over the years have exhibited favorable traits such as sustained premiumization, reduced discounting, industry-leading ASP growth profile, and growing volume offtake. As a result, we registered the highest quarter four and full year performance in the history of Campus Activewear, both from revenue and profitability viewpoint. Despite facing COVID-19-related sales and supply chain disruptions, we registered our highest full year revenue, highest EBITDA, and highest PAT, both in amount and in percentage, in FY22. While our trade distribution channel has demonstrated resilience with a year-on-year FY22 growth of 39%, our D2C is on a robust growth trajectory, exhibiting more than 150% year-on-year growth in FY22. In terms of trend line, our revenue has grown at a CAGR of 26% over last 3 years, with volume growth at 16% and ASP growth at 9% over the same period. On the supply chain front, we anticipate a challenging inflationary environment in the near medium term. Acting proactively on the same since beginning of the calendar year, we started locking in long-term forward contracts for critical raw material categories and undertook inventory buildup based on empirical data analysis with an objective to maximize our sales and gross margins in the coming quarters. Our quarter four performance is an early reflection of our efforts undertaken by the entire team towards cost optimization, which allows us some latitude in terms of cost control and price escalations. We continue to monitor our input costs with a hawk eye for the vigil of our in-house manufacturing setup and for the benefit of our expansive ancillary vendor ecosystem as well. Now, as an outcome of such interventions, both on the supply side and on the demand side, we are pleased with the consumer sentiment and the demand profile witnessed so far in the current quarter and are confident of maintaining our trendline growth trajectory and margin profile in the near to medium term. I will now hand over to our CFO, Mr. Raman Chawla, to take you through more details on the quarter and the yearly performance.
Thank you so much, Piyush. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Quarter 4 Earnings Call of Campus Activewear Limited. During the quarter under review, brand Campus demonstrated a lot of resilience and clocked an impressive revenue run rate across all our distribution channels, despite an adverse impact of COVID-19, which was witnessed in the month of January and February, early across our trade distribution and D2C offline channels. Campus delivered its best fourth quarter, both in terms of top line and bottom line growth. Here is a quick snapshot of financial performance of Campus Activewear Limited. First, I'll take you through the quarter four FY22 results for consolidated entity. The revenue from operations increased by 28.1% year-on-year to 352 crores during the quarter, while encountering tailwinds such as COVID-19 third wave impact witnessed during January and mid-February 2022. EBITDA was INR 78 crores as compared to 65 crores in quarter 4 21. EBITDA margin stood at 22.3% in quarter 4 FY22. Net profit for the quarter stood at 39.6 crores with a PAT margin of 11.2%. In terms of our full year results for consolidated, revenue from operations increased by 67.9% year-on-year to INR 1194 crores in fiscal 22, despite a COVID-19 related adverse impact witnessed from April to May 21 and then again in January and February 2022. Our full year EBITDA stood at 243.9 crores as compared to INR 119 crores in fiscal 21, demonstrating a 103% year-on-year growth in EBITDA. Fiscal 22 EBITDA margins stood at 20.4% versus 16.8% in fiscal 21. Net profit for the year, fiscal 22, stood at 124.4 crores with a PAT margin of 10.4%, as against the PAT of 26.8 crores in fiscal 21, which had a PAT margin of 3.8%. Fiscal 22 sales volume registered at 19.3 million pairs as against 13 million pairs in fiscal 21, thereby generating a 48% year-on-year volume growth. Our fiscal 22 aggregate average selling prices, ASPs, stood at 620 per pair versus INR 547 per pair in fiscal 21, thereby resulting in a 13.3% year-on-year ASP growth. Finally, on the our net debt to EBITDA ratio has improved from 1.1x in fiscal 21 to 0.7x in fiscal 22. And while our return on capital employed has also gone up from 18.5% in fiscal 21 to approximately 30% in fiscal 22. And our return on equity has also gone up from 9% in fiscal 21 to 33% in fiscal 22. With this, I'll conclude and hand over to the operator for question and answers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one now. We'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Priyam Kimawat from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for the opportunity. You reported a direct-to-consumer channel sales of around 444 crores for FY22. Can you help me with the breakup of this between online and our EBO channel?
Yeah, hi. Piyush this side. I'll take this question up. We typically look at this as our D2C channel, direct-to-consumer channel. In terms of breakup, our D2C online is close to 390 crores and our D2C offline is the remaining 53 crores for the fiscal year 22.
Okay. Sir, and with regards to our margins, we've done an exceptionally great margin in both quarter 4 and FY22. How should we look this going forward? Say, because in FY23, I think there would be some pressure on cost inflation as well. So going forward in the medium term, what will be your margin guidance?
So, no, great question. See, while we cannot give you a firm guidance, unfortunately, but what we'd like to say is that we've performed remarkably well historically. If you look at our trend over the last 3, 4 years, 5 years, or even 10 years, we've grown at a CAGR of 27%. And our margins have sustainably grown. Both the EBITDA and PAT margins have grown 1 to 1.5% year on year for the last 3 years, continuously since FY19. So we just like to say that we'll be continuing with the momentum that the company has demonstrated.
And
yes, you must have noticed that we have taken some proactive steps, as you have mentioned, inflation and all the other transient aspects. So as a company, as a franchise, we have taken some proactive steps of locking in our key raw material prices with longer-term forward contracts and some other cost optimization related levers along with sustained price pass-through to our end consumers in a regulated manner. With all these interventions, both on the supply side and the demand side, we are fairly confident that we'll maintain our empirical growth trajectory while maintaining our baseline margins, both at EBITDA and PAT levels.
Okay. Sir, and we talked during our IPO meet that we'll be focusing on expanding our sneaker range as well as getting into newer geographies for this. Can you let us know what is our current contribution from this sneakers part of the portfolio and how do we see growth going forward in this?
In what sort of geography?
In geographical spread. On a directional basis, whatever we have communicated during our roadshow meetings, we are on the right track. We have seen great promise coming in from emerging and our emerging and frontier markets in terms of geographical spreads. On a ballpark level, our core markets are contributing say 50 to 55% of our revenue, while the remaining is coming from our emerging and frontier markets at 45%. And we envisage this kind of a mix to sustain in the near medium term.
Okay, so my question was more pertaining to our sneaker portfolio, which I think was around 7 to 8% of total sales. How do we see this going forward?
So we are currently still, we are working on that portfolio. It's a major focus area for the company, like we told you last time. So while I cannot share concrete numbers, but I can tell you that we have a very, very good lineup of this portfolio for this year planned. So we are expecting some good numbers out of that.
And there is a very thin line of demarcation between sports and athleisure footwear and casual footwear, which we interchangeably call as sneakers. So overall, this is the only portfolio that we are focused on.
Okay.
From a larger perspective standpoint and from a market outlook standpoint. So we are again very confident of the product profile and the portfolio that we have launched in the market so far, and we have seen good customer sentiment and response to our products, which has kind of translated into our quarterly numbers and full year numbers. And we expect the same kind of response coming in from our end consumers in the forthcoming quarters as well.
Okay, perfect. All the best going forward. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one at this time. We take the next question from the line of Ankit Keria from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
So my first question was on your net debt. We still have around 175 crores of debt, and YOY debt has actually increased despite significant top line and bottom line growth, while our working capital has significantly been impacted. So just wanted to understand what is the roadmap to be debt-free and what is the sustainable working capital we should model?
Yeah, so great question, Ankit. Hi, Piyush this side. So, Ankit, as you must have noticed, during our opening remarks, we have shared part of our strategy that we are proactively investing into our inventory buildup because we foresee some inflationary challenges coming our way. More than inflationary, we anticipate supply chain disruptions to continue, and that's why we have taken a proactive step of building up the inventory war chest in order to gain some incremental revenue growth and in order to sustain our margin profile. So from that perspective, whatever increment in working capital you see, almost 20-25% of that has got into working capital buildup. In addition to that, you'll also notice that FY21 was kind of a stressed year from a payables standpoint in terms of day sales outstanding, because the company was trying to conserve cash in arduous operating environment. Now, since we have gone back to our regular payable days, which is in line with our FY20 numbers, we have kind of released payments to our vendors in order to ensure that they are in great health so that they can support us during the coming quarters when FY23 key performance is to be adjusted. Now, based on these two factors, almost 25% of our incremental working capital has gone into inventory, and remaining 70% has gone into the normalization of our payables. Owing to that, part of our operating cash flow has gone into, and you can do the numbers and we can connect offline on what concrete numbers are, has gone into our working capital enhancement. And part of this has been funded by our debt line. While this number looks transitionary in nature, in the near medium term, in the coming years, while we come back to our normalized working capital days, you'll see our OCF to our EBITDA to OCF conversion to come back to our normalized levels of 55 to 60% levels to start with.
Yes. Sure. My second question is, on the ASP increase. While for the full year we have had around 13-14% ASP increase, on a run rate basis, could you talk of quarter four how has been the ASP growth, and incrementally, are we covered for the raw material, or do we need to take more price increases in the first half of the financial year?
So great question.
In terms of ASP increase for quarter four, also we have done almost 10% of ASP increase from 568 to 627 for quarter four. And similarly, going forward, we don't see much of price increase right now because we've already taken two major price increases in the last 2 years. So we are in a comfortable spot that way to maintain our margins.
Just to add on, hi, this is Aman here, Ankit. We continue to monitor our cost inflation, right, on a virtually month-on-month basis, right, and then directionally take a view saying that if we need to go out and take a price increase or anything like that.
Ankit, just to add on an empirical basis, if you notice, while FY22 is a great year for us, we have demonstrated more than 13% ASP increase, which is a mix of both the change in sales mix and the cost escalations or the price escalations that we have taken. On a slightly longer term basis, our ASP growth has been in the zip code of almost 8 to 8.5%. We expect this ballpark ASP increase to continue in the near medium term, largely on account of change in product mix and premiumization that we have witnessed across our overall product portfolio.
Last question, if may ask, in the D2C sales, what is the percentage of B2B from Udaan and AGO? Incrementally, what are the contracts with these guys if they're doing, price war and, our distributors are getting impacted because of that?
So, Ankit, we are not sharing the exact specs, but let me just assure you, the percentage coming in from our B2B sales overall as a vertical is very small compared to our overall online sales. It's in low double digits right now. So far as price war and all that turf war kind of a situation is concerned in terms of predatory pricing, let me assure you that over the last 1.5-2 years, we have maintained a hawkeye view on how the business operations are being conducted. We have the requisite technology infrastructure in place to understand and to figure out who has kind of done price undercutting and territory infringement. And basis that, we have taken proactive measures across all our partners, be it our distributors, trade distributors, or be it our B2B partners. So far, they have maintained harmonious operations across territories that they have been assigned. And this is something that we have witnessed over the last 6 to 12 months. And we don't foresee any kind of disruptions coming our way because of this channel. And overall, the trend that we have seen lately is they have taken a backseat in terms of cash burn so far as our segment is concerned, which has, again, assuaged our concerns to a larger extent.
Yeah, Ankit, hi, Nikhil here. So just want to add that for us, all the channels are extremely important, especially the legacy channel of distribution, where we have worked very hard to create this kind of distribution network, India's largest distribution network over the last 3 decades. So there is no reason, why we would be looking to sabotage that in any way. So, we are very clear with the strategy that we will not be, growing other channels at the expense of distribution business, right? So I just want to assure you that.
And this business is anyways only 10% of our overall D2C online portfolio. So it's very small comparatively.
Sure. That helps. I'll come back in the queue for more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ankit.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Tejas Shah from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is kind of repetitive of the earlier participant, which is around margins. So we have actually very healthy set of margins in FY22. That was also considering the difficulty here that we had across on raw material part. So just wanted to understand, what is our margin philosophy? Is margin a goal seek number around which we build the business model or business plan for the year? Or is it an output dependent on growth that we chase for the year?
So, hi, Tejas, Piyush this side. So Tejas, our objective primarily is to, so financials are just an outcome of how we strategize and how we operate our business and execute our strategies. So the idea here is to continuously offer the best-in-class product profile to our consumers, to our target consumers. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the endeavor is to continuously premiumize the portfolio while not leaving gaps in the pricing spectrum that we operate in. So that's the overall philosophy that we operate with. Now, with that philosophy, as we premiumize over the years, we see both kind of margin expansion. We have seen both kind of margin expansion, both at the material margin and the gross margin level, on account of change in product mix and because of premiumization. And again, between gross margin to EBITDA, because of the operating leverage that we have generated, given the kind of franchise we have created over the years. Not just limited to the asset fitting piece, but also because of rationalization of our fixed cost. So whatever margin expansion we have witnessed over the last 3-4 years, it is broadly equally divided between the product mix and the premiumization bit and the operating leverage bit. And we believe that this is how we'll be continuing in the near medium term from here on.
Yeah. No, and I'd also like to add, Tejas, Nikhil here, that you know, we are also extremely dedicated and committed towards growing the brand equity much stronger. So we are continuously investing behind the brand in terms of our marketing spend, which has gone north of about 100 crores over the last 2 years is what we spent in pure ATL spends. So looking at with these kind of best in class marketing spends and by virtue of growing the brand, we're also looking to grow our margins. We always endeavor to do that. And at the same time, operating leverage is now sort of kicking in as well as we are growing the revenues beyond the fixed expenses base.
And yeah. Just to close the loop on your question, it's neither a goal seek nor a top-line chase that we incur. It's actually a balanced approach that we follow with the philosophy that we have just underlined. If we execute, see, the idea is very, very simple. If we execute what we conceptualize in a very dedicated manner and in a very disciplined manner, both gross margin expansion and operating leverage are bound to kick in. And this is something that we have witnessed over the last 3-5 years.
Fair enough. So I'll just, so partly the answer question has been answered for me. I'll just rephrase the part which still is unanswered for me again. Is that, see, there are companies which specifically have in larger lifestyle retail space who specifically mentioned that they don't want to operate beyond 22% and not below 20%. And any alteration in that, they made intervention to protect that range. So I just wanted to understand margin philosophy from the perspective that beyond what level you are not comfortable, you believe that you'll attract unwanted competition, and below which level you will actually make aggressive pricing intervention if need be to protect that kind of profitability. That was the main crux of the question.
So, Tejas, while we are not giving out explicit guardrails out there, but yes, we also do follow guardrails in terms of margin protection. And there are guardrails in place within the system which ensure that at every single extreme or every single extreme of the ambit, we take correctionary actions more on the proactive side rather than on the reactive side. So this is something that our finance department and our CFO monitors on a very, very dedicated, in a very, very dedicated fashion, wherein any leading indicators, both in terms of our demand forecasting, our volume uptake, in terms of sales velocity and things like that, it's a very detailed and you can say extraneous exercise that we undertake. But we rely more on leading indicators and go by the guardrail principles. While we are not at liberty to share those guardrails over this call, but prima facie, that's the mechanism that we follow in order to ensure that we have an optimum mix of both revenue growth and at the same time a healthy margin profile. So it's a balanced approach end of the day that we take in order to ensure that we kind of meet both the objectives.
Sure. Thanks. Second question pertains to on growth side. How should we? I believe we must be over-indexed in some of the regions, and we are under-indexed in some of the regions. So, in terms of priority of regional growth, how should we think about coming 2-3 years? where you'll be putting more focus and where it will be relatively on autopilot for you?
You mean in terms of regions, right?
Yeah, regions.
So see, we basically have a very clear strategy. We are very, so in our core markets like North and East, North, East, and even Central to that extent, which contributes to about 55% of the overall top line. So we are almost monopolizing these markets in a way, and we will continue to do so. We are very, very strong in these markets. Then when it comes to, you know, our frontier and emerging markets, which is basically West and South India, we have a two-pronged approach there, where we are, you know, expanding in both the channels quite rapidly, be it offline distribution or be it D2C online. So D2C online has significantly actually helped us enter the territory of, let's say, South India, for example, where the distribution has historically been not that strong. So it's become a major focus area because of that. And D2C online is complementing our distribution channels now to enter these new frontier territories. Similarly, you know, West India, where we have been very strong, and now we have entered in with our own EBO outlets as well, with our COCO stores and franchisee-owned, franchisee-operated stores. Both the models are doing extremely well, along with distribution and D2C online. So all three channels are present there. So the approach is quite simple, that we need to maintain our growth and, you know, market share and grow that in the core territories. And at the same time, both in frontier and emerging markets, we are taking those markets head on to grow in line with the, let's say, the entire sports shoe market segment share that these markets command. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thanks. That's all from my side, and all the best for coming quarters.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Akshay Thakkar from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, congratulations on a good set of numbers and a good debut. Two questions. One was, you know, going back to the earlier question on working capital. So understand last year was not steady state. Again, this year you might have had compulsions on inventory, on how you're paying payables. If you could just help us understand going ahead, what's the kind of you know, working capital levels or the, you know, cash flow conversion levels that you'd want to work with, that'd be helpful. That is question one. Question two was, if you help us putting in your business of June quarter, last 2 years, obviously, I'm guessing you would have had an impact. This year should be a normal quarter. So, like, you know, just trying to understand how much of delta growth that adds to full year, to the extent possible to discuss that. And the third was around gross margins, not to nitpick, but some volatility quarterly. You know, last quarter was the gross margins were higher, this quarter are lower. Is gross margin also cyclical, or, you know, we should take Q4 numbers as a starting base and then pricing and sourcing interventions kick in? Those three questions from my side. Thank you.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for all the three questions. Piyush this side. So I'll take one by one, starting with the first question around working capital. So see, the thing to understand here is we have taken this two-pronged approach, one around the inventory as a proactive approach, and the other is around the payables. Now, I'll start with payables first. FY21 for us was slightly stressed in terms of payables because we were in a cash conservation mode due to COVID-19 and the uncertainties regarding it. Typically, our payable days in terms of day sales outstanding are in the ballpark of 60 to 65 days of day sales outstanding in terms of sales. So far as payables are concerned, last year they got stressed to almost 88 days. Now, as you are aware that we have a very expansive base of ancillary network, and we need to ensure that they are in good health in order to support us for future growth and from a margin conservation standpoint also. Needless to say, from an agility standpoint also. So we have kind of normalized that stressed payables from 88 days to almost back to our normal levels of 60 days in terms of DSOs, day sales outstanding on payables. Now that has led to almost 80% of our operating cash flow consumption, or 75 to 80% of our operating cash flow consumption, because we've kind of funded almost 90 crores towards normalizing those payables in a way. Now the second thing, which was more around inventory, we have done slight build-up on our RM and SFG because we see this inflationary trend coming in. We have not only started locking in long-term forward contracts, but we have also started building the requisite inventory for fungible inventory elements such as meshes, raw materials, PU, PVC, and some bit of SFG. Now that has consumed another 20% of our operating cash flow, which was expected in FY22. And that translates to almost 30 to 35 crores of incremental inventory buildup at our side. Now, once we normalize all these elements, our typical and another, you can say, 17, 18 crores of our working capital got stuck into our IPO expenses, which is transitionary in nature. Now it has been refunded to the company.
To the selling shareholders.
Because it was an OCR, it was an offer for sale OFS. But at 31st March, it was locked in from our working capital. All that has come back. So in a steady state scenario, our EBITDA to OCF conversion is expected to be in the ballpark of around 55 to 60%, and this is something that we expect once this entire thing normalizes in the next 3-4 quarters. So that's the outlook on the working capital side. Now coming to your second question around or rather your third question around what is the normalized June quarter? While we are not giving any concrete guidances around it, but if we take the empirical evidence into play, over the last 5 years, our first quarter has typically contributed around 17 to 18% in terms of our overall annual top line. And this trend has kind of sustained over the last 5 years. This is not transient in nature. We expect to our June quarter to perform on similar lines going forward as well, because of the seasonality element involved. And the seasonality element also plays into your third question around gross margin, because typically open footwear has lower gross margin compared to our closed footwear portfolio. And first two quarters of financial year are heavy on some meaningful contribution. No, they're not heavy, but they have some meaningful contribution coming in our overall sales mix.
From open
So the best way to look at it is on a year-on-year basis, we should look at the gross margin profile for a quarterly performance rather than doing a preceding quarter analysis as a base rate.
Okay.
I mean,
margin
expansion is a very, very key priority. I mean, if you look at, you know, from 2019 to now, we've increased steadily from 46% to almost about touching 50s for this year.
Okay.
The thing is, just to add one last line on the seasonality bit, our first half empirically has contributed 38 to 40% of our top line, and our second half typically contributes another 60 to 62% of our top line. We've been kind of smoothing the curve over the years. We have changed it from 30-70 to almost 40-60 now, and we expect this to smoothen a little bit going forward as well, but this is what the trend line looks like as of now, and hence the impact on the margin profile as well.
Okay, great. If I look at margins this year and I adjust for the IPO expenses, clearly not. Should I take that as a base when you say you aim to maintain or increase, or should I take the reported numbers?
Sorry to interject. The IPO expenses were not a part of P&L. It was just a balance sheet to cash flow routing.
Amount recoverable.
Okay.
So it has no impact on our P&L or our margin profile.
Only a cash flow impact.
I'm not sure it's written recognized in books of accounts. So you've not recognized through P&L, you've done it directly through
the balance sheet directly.
Because this is not a company expense, actually. The IPO expenses are to the selling shareholders, which was completely over.
It was just an advance given on behalf of selling shareholders, and now it has been recovered. Correct.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Akshay.
We take the next question from the line of Jaspreet Arora from Equentis PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for greeting, gentlemen. Congratulations on a great listing end of the quarter. And thank you so much for all the disclosures and the conference call. My first
Sorry, Jaspreet, can you come a little closer to the mic?
Please speak louder.
Yeah.
Is it better?
Yeah,
far better. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm so sorry for that. So, yeah, great quarter and listening, and thanks for all the disclosures. My first question was around the slide 330, right, where you've given the price segmentation and the three buckets, the entry, semi-premium, and premium. So as per my quick calculation, wanted to check if, by volume, would it be right that 70% is coming from the entry and the next 30% between the semi and the premium segment?
By volume.
So, Jaspreet, while I can give you some directional sense out there, it's not 70-30, but it's more like 45-55.
What's 45?
You can say 45 coming in from our entry segment and remaining 55% coming in from semi-premium and premium.
Okay. Got it. So related to that was the, our premium segment where we are competing, where the pricing is about 1500 to 3000 and around that segment. When we are, pricing in that, so one is obviously the cost stroke margins that we are trying to get here because obviously it's premium product. And the second is, the price proposition or the value proposition that we're offering to the client, and last obviously being the closer we're getting to that border where we cross, and the likes of Puma, Adidas, Nike become more attractive. So just wanted some color or thoughts in this bracket, what exactly goes into or whatever you can share into the pricing of this particular bracket.
So 4 to 5x.
What we typically do is we follow a cost to MRP kind of matrix, starting with our economy to our semi-premium to our premium portfolio. The differentiating factor around our premium segment, which essentially, so where the belly of our volume of tech lies, it lies between 1500 to almost 2200 to 2300 rupees. So that's the belly in this segment, so far as volume of tech is concerned. Now, how we have differentiated from other brands is, one, on the basis of our cost leadership advantage that we have by virtue of our vertically integrated manufacturing setup. We are one of the lowest cost producers for the same kind of product that our competitors have to offer in this market. And second, we have off late over the last 3 to 5 years, we have done a lot of ATL spending, a lot of advertisement spend towards creating that aspiration in our target audience. So if you look at our last 2 years' performance only, we have spent more than 100 crores towards brand building alone. And this has gone a long way towards creating that aspiration in our target audiences. So if you do a like-to-like product comparison, you'll get your answers as well. What is something that we are offering as a product vis-a-vis what the competition is offering, plus the push.
Yeah, at the same time, you see, whatever value proposition that we're giving, like you mentioned, it's significantly higher than any other competition, be it domestic or a MNC brand. So generally, any of our portfolio prices are at least 4 to 5x cheaper than the similar, let's say, comparable MNC brand product. So that's how we operate, and that's the biggest USP for us as a brand and as a product company, right? So I hope that answers the question. So basically from 2,000 to 3,000 rupees segment, this is a key focus area for the company going forward as well. And, the kind of products that they're giving in that range are being sold by the MNC brands at not less than 8 to 10,000 bucks.
Okay. Got it. Basis, the last couple of years, history or whatever, ex COVID, that phase, what percentage of sales would be during so-called sale versus the full price, whatever that you've tracked, you've been able to track? given on the MNC risk much larger during that phase.
I'll give you some aggregate discount. Yeah, we can
take. So, see, 60% of our sales even now is coming from trade distribution channel, and
40%
of our sales comes from our direct to consumer channels. So even on so just to give you some color on the online channel, which contributes up to 35% of our sales, our aggregate discount on this channel has always stayed below 20% since inception.
Okay.
And right, which is the best in the class, by the way. Like you will not find any other footwear brand who's operating in lesser aggregate discounting than this.
Okay.
Is trade distribution, which is a B2B format, so it's not that relevant because the matrix is more relevant on the retail side.
Got it. And just lastly, one of the vectors you mentioned on slide 25 was product diversification via extensions into light categories. If you could talk a bit more here, what exactly are we referring?
So, by allied categories, we mean, you know, the range of sneakers, for example, like similar to, just to give you an illustration, like how Adidas has a Stan Smith range. So, those kind of shoes is what we call casual shoes range as well, right? So, that is something that also we are focusing on. But apart from that, in terms of allied categories, we are not looking to diversify anytime soon into, let's say, apparels or any of such accessories, given that, you know, there's a massive opportunity in the segment that we're currently operating. We're the market leaders here, and we don't want to divert our focus or take our focus away from the core segment. So we are very clear with that, and, you know, until we have a very sizable market share and are comfortable in this position, we would not be looking to expand into any other allied categories.
Understood. Fine, and that's helpful. Yeah. Great going. Thanks so much, and all the best.
Thank you.
We take the next question from the line of Akhil from Centrum. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on the B2C online part. I think in the previous question, you mentioned that we are using that channel to penetrate into our emerging and frontier markets. Would you be able to bifurcate like how much of B2C sales, online sales is coming from our emerging and frontier markets while and how much is coming from the established markets?
I can give you a directional sense actually around that. As an anecdote, South India, especially the three South Indian states are frontier markets for us. So we as a management decided that as a strategy, let's D2C online be the spearheading channel for these markets, because rolling out physical trade distribution network is one, time consuming, and second, you need to identify your demand micro markets, your cohorts and your customer persona before entering into any market. So it's time consuming as well. So it's resource intensive as well. So as a result, we have successfully penetrated in the South India market. So, for example, if South India is contributing roughly 10 to 12% of our overall top line, 80% plus of that is coming from our D2C online channel. Similarly, West is an emerging market for us. Here we had followed a similar strategy, and then we did a very optimized entry into this market using trade distribution as a network. So now, while trade distribution contributes the lion's share, almost 30-35% of our emerging market sales is coming from B2C online. From our D2C online network. So directionally, on a company level, 60% of our sales come from trade distribution, 35% comes from B2C online, and remaining 5% comes from B2C offline,
which is our own stores.
Got it. And just from a brand equity perspective, right, given that in a trade channel we are more established in north markets, how does that differ when we sell through the online channel? I mean, I'm assuming, like, you know, not just the effort required to put trade channel in south and west on a higher side, but also the brand equity might be slightly weaker as compared to our north market. So anything if you can highlight, how does it differ basically if we sell through online channel versus the trade channel?
Yeah, so see, like I told you earlier, we have one of the highest, you know, marketing spends amongst all of the peers. And in sports shoe segment, I can tell you that there is nobody even close to this kind of ATL spend that we are doing. Now, we are again the only company who are investing proportionately higher, disproportionately higher actually in our online, in our digital channels, in our online channels as a marketing spend. I cannot give you a number, but it's significantly higher than any other competition. So that has also significantly helped the company gain market share and create brand equity, you know, through the online medium into our frontier markets, you know, where traditionally the brand has not been present. So using that, you know, as an advantage to our strategy, we've been able to now successfully, on the back of online channel in these frontier markets, we've been able to start and expand our distribution channel as well, distribution reach, by appointing, you know, very well managed distributors and retailers. So that's how, you know, we have played on the strategy. So we are basically our marketing spend on the online channel is quite high. You know, that's how we're managing the operations.
And just to add to it, Akhil, see, in terms of market size and our revenue contribution on a geographical perspective, we are fairly indexed at par so far as North, Central, East, and West India markets are concerned. So if, for example, 20% of the overall sports and athleisure footwear market is based out of West, we are more or less at par with that market sizing so far as our own revenue contribution is concerned. The only the markets which are left are frontier markets for us, where we have taken a very differentiated approach, wherein D2C online has been used as a spearheading channel to establish the beachhead. And then trade distribution would follow suit once customer persona and demand micro markets are identified.
Got it. Right. This is helpful. And the last question is on the A&P spend. You mentioned that we spent around 100 crores on brand building for the last 2 years. Would it be possible to share, like, as a percentage of sales, say, average FY18 over 20, how much you spend as a percentage of sales in A&P versus FY22?
Sure, Akhil. So we are spending close to 6 to 6.5% of our revenues, of our overall revenues in our ATL spends. For both the channels put together, for basically all the channels put together.
And how much that was historically, let's say by 18 to 20, if I have to compare, it excludes 21 because of pandemic, but 18 to 20.
Sure. So pre-COVID times, this was generally in the range of 4 to 4.5%. We've increased it by 200 basis points, basically because we've flowed back a lot of the operating leverage that has come into the company in the last 2 years. We've flowed that back into the marketing spend without impacting the margins, right? Because we have had other levers to sort of grow the margins alongside the operating leverage. So that's how, you know, we have come to this number of 6.5%. And while I don't want to give you guidance, but I can tell you that it's you know, as the top line is growing, the revenue base is growing. The quantum, the absolute quantum of this ATL spend is now material enough for us to sustain any kind of, you know, campaign, how intensive, you know, it might be.
See, Akhil, our philosophy is very simple. We are trying to accentuate the experience of our end consumers around a trifecta of aspiration, affordability, and accessibility. Over the last decade, we have already solved the problem of, we believe we have... We have, to a larger extent, solved the problem of affordability by offering the best product value proposition and accessibility by rolling out the most expansive distribution network, be it online or offline. Now we are spending more and more money towards enhancing your or elevating your experience towards aspirational part of the trifecta. And that's why we have upped the ante so far as our ATL spends are concerned and taken it up by 2 percentage points from 4.5 to 6.5 percentage points. We believe in the near medium term, as Nikhil has rightly mentioned, we'll be maintaining this kind of a trajectory in order to elevate the brand experience and the overall aspiration and halo around it.
Sure. This is helpful. That's all from my side, and wishing you best luck for coming quarters.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Zubair. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on a wonderful set of results. A couple of questions from my side. One of them was on the gross margin, please. So appreciate that, you know, it's been somewhat lower than the previous quarter, but the EBITDA was still up. So if you could just discuss the potential levers that you've got in place to make sure, or, you know, kind of how you ensure the bottom line profitability, for instance, you know, the other expenses has come down, or the employee benefit expenses has been also moving around a bit. So could you just discuss the levers that you have in place to make sure that EBITDA kind of stays where you would want it to stay, despite the a bit of weakness on the gross margin?
Sure, Zubair. So, no, good question. So, you know, while on a year-on-year basis, we have done really well compared to FY21 by increasing both the gross margins, EBITDA and PAT. On a quarter four basis, if we compare to quarter four FY21, yes, we have taken a slight dip in the margin in terms of less than 1% in terms of PAT. Mainly to the account of two reasons. One is the annualization has kicked in for our employee cost, you know, where significant hiring had been done in FY21 and FY22. So the annualization of that happened in FY22, fourth quarter. The other impact that we have seen, which was largely transient in nature, again, was due to the increase in freight and power and fuel cost, which has led to somewhat a temporary blip in the margin. But we did not really have time, you know, in quarter four to pass on this increased freight cost immediately to the distribution channel and to the channel partners in online. So going forward, we see it coming back to normalized rates as the crude rates have gone back down again. They're not as high as they were in the beginning of quarter four. So given those scenarios, we are quite hopeful and optimistic that, you know, we'll continue to maintain our margins going forward the way historically we have.
Yes, so just to add to it, if you really dissect it, our material margins for quarter four in FY22 and quarter four in FY21 are more or less in the same ballpark at 48.4% versus 48.8% last year. The transient blip that Nikhil just spoke about shaved off another 60 basis point because we had just taken a price increase in December 2021, which was quarter three, and there was a certain, in addition to this, power and fuel and freight spike because of the crude spike happening in January, there was a reset of GST rate from 5% to 12%, which was announced by the government overnight in January. That was that has also contributed to a large extent towards this gross margin dip of almost 1% on a year-on-year basis for the fourth quarter. But rest assured, we have taken enough steps and enough operating leverage has kicked in for us to preserve our EBITDA margins, not from a quarter-on-quarter perspective, but from a near medium-term perspective as well.
Yeah, so that makes sense. It was very supportive. You know, understanding this, how often can you pass on that cost? So for instance, you know, what's the propensity that the business would possess the ability to pass on? So could you go from here and have an extra 10% increase before hurting the demand?
So, yeah, Zubair, no, we have demonstrated this exact scenario very successfully over the last 2 years post-COVID, where we have had significant inflationary experiences once in 2021 and then again in 22, and both the times we've as you can see the trend of the company, we've in spite of passing all of that cost to the end consumer, we've actually grown our margins, or not only have we passed it on, right? So we have shown and we've demonstrated that that experience, and you know, yeah, so going forward as well, we are very hopeful of maintaining it.
See, the illustration is very simple, Zubair. Even if there is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of a raw material inflation of, say, 15%, our cost-to-MRP matrices are such that that it's only one-fourth or one-fifth of the overall MRP, right? That's the kind of spectrum we operate in. And even in that, 60% is raw material cost and 40% is our value addition cost. So if you really look at it, any a 15% inflationary impact would only translate into a sub 5% MRP impact. So on a median base of, say, 1,500 rupees, that 5% roughly translates to less than 100 rupees, that is 75 rupees.
So we have demonstrated time and again enough price elasticity at our median price point, way higher than this 5% escalation, that we can successfully pass on to an end consumer. And this is something that we have successfully done over the last 2-3 years without causing any demand erosion or volume offtake impact. And we are confident that so long as this stays in the same ballpark, we should be able to handle this well.
And just one final question from our side would be on the EBO side, if you could just share some statistics on what's happening there, because I remember I think there was about 100 stores, and I see that the balance sheet obviously has somewhat increase in the, you know, the leases and the right of use assets. So do you want to understand that, do we see more of that coming onto your balance sheet, or are these the flagship locations that the business has now kind of sorted out, and then the rest of them would be taken by the more franchisee side, and don't really see more further uptake on these right of use or leases?
Sure. So, see, at, as of March end 22, we have basically closed it at about 107 odd stores, of which roughly 50 stores are basically 40 stores. Sorry, are for franchisee owned, and the balance are basically company owned, company operated. Now, going forward, so this was largely, you know, this mix was largely because first 2-3 years we've taken our time to demonstrate a very robust COCO model for our franchisee partners, and only lately since last, since the very, you know, first year of FY22, we've started opening franchisee stores. So going forward as well, you know, the strategy is very clear that we are not firstly a retail brand, right? We are a consumer brand. So we don't want to get into that retail play. For us, EBOs act as a very, very good complementary channel, you know, for firstly showcasing the entire breadth of range that we have, the most expansive range in the country that we operate with. So we are able to demonstrate, you know, that expansive range very successfully through our EBO channels to not only to the end consumers, but also to our retail partners, you know, on ground in various cities where we operate. Also, you know, through our EBOs, we've been able to very successfully premiumize our range, where, you know, it's much more easier for us to sell a shoe north of 2,500 or 3,000 rupees. So, we, you know, because of these complementary benefits, you know, we have that's the strategy with which we have taken this approach to open our EBO outlets. And going forward as well, we would be looking to open at least 100 odd stores, you know, on a year on. This is just a tentative guidance, but majority of them would basically be franchisee owned, franchisee operated, and very, very few, you know, of them would be company owned. So we don't see a major capital expense going forward on account of our EB outlets.
So Zubair, the strategy is very, very simple. We have perfected the model. We have kind of demonstrated the earnings profile that you can get out of a campus-owned exclusive brand outlet to our franchisee partners. We have empaneled leading franchisee partners all across the country, and now the idea is, so whatever number of stores we open from here on, 80% of that would be franchisee-owned, and we would only be entering using our company-owned, company-operated stores in the flagship locations. So going forward, we are going to follow a hybrid strategy, more lean towards asset-light compared to asset-heavy.
Perfect. That was my question. So incremental store openings, 80% would be franchises. That's very helpful.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Sashank Agarwal. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Am I audible?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, my question would be, do you plan to become a D2C player by offering products directly to consumers in the marketplace model? And the next question would be, what is the advertising percentage directly towards the marketplace model?
No. So, hi, sorry, what's your name again? Prashant. Shashank, I just want to say that we know the, like I said earlier, all channels are extremely important for the growth of the company, and we are looking at it from an omni-channel perspective. That's the strategy for the company. The strategy is not to focus purely on D2C online, for example, like you said. And, you know, as an omni-channel approach, so far we have, you know, given sales in the ratio of 60-40. 60% from distribution, 40% from B2C channels. I cannot give you a guidance going forward, but I can just say that this mix would not drastically change, probably, right? So just to assuage some concerns that we would not become an online-only brand, if that's your question.
See, our philosophy is very simple. All three channels that we operate, be it trade distribution, be it our online, or be it our own D2C offline channel, are complementary to each other. They have complemented each other's growth in a certain way. Like EBOs have complemented the premiumization of our distribution network. Online has led to the entry of trade distribution into frontier and emerging markets. And similarly, by virtue of our trade distribution, our online channel became so successful because people were already aware of the brand and they were kind of aware of the size and fit because it's a touch and feel category. So all three channels are equally important to us, and that's why we are focusing on an omni-channel play, where the idea is to offer a seamless purchase experience to our customer, irrespective of the customer journey they follow, whether they become aware of the brand online or offline, whether they use or touch or feel the brand online or offline, or they end up purchasing the brand online or offline. We have to be there, present at every single milestone in order to ensure that there are minimum drop-offs, and we end up owning the purchase journey of every single customer. That's the philosophy. It's channel agnostic. We are an omni-channel play for the longest time.
Okay, thank you. Got it.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Arpit Shah. Please go ahead. Mr. Shah, please go ahead with your question.
Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
He asked a few questions from the management. So I just wanted to understand, it almost took us 15-20 years to reach a 1,000 crore revenue number for campus. So you believe the next 1,000 crores would be a lot faster, let's say, in the next 3 or 4 years, given that we have a very big push for D2C, be it online, offline. So the next 1,000 crores can come in the next 3 years or so?
So nobody's seen the future, but what I can tell you is that we have grown at 27% CAGR over the last 10 years. So we were a sub-100 crore company in 2010. We are close this year at about 1,200 crores, FY22. So I think that way we have done a very good run rate. We have demonstrated one of the best run rates, all over in this entire segment in throughout, globally, I would say one of the best performances. So certainly I cannot comment on the three-year journey, but, our endeavor would be to keep on growing the way we have.
Got it. Just wanted to understand, let's say when we move to the D2C channel, as our percentage of revenues keep increasing from there, what would be a differential that we would be seeing on the gross margin as well as on the working capital? Because if I see for the last 2 years, if your working capital has reduced significantly and your margin has improved significantly to 22%. So for every 1% increase in D2C, what would be the differential that you would see in your gross margin and your working capital?
Yeah, hi, Piyush this side. So while we are not, we are not at liberty to share the exact segmental margin profile across our channels, but directionally, so far our D2C channel has led to an incremental, a better margin profile compared to our conventional channels. And that's why as our mix has changed over the last 3-4 years, you have seen an incremental improvement in our EBITDA margin and in our PAT margin profiles. So, but that said, we are also leveraging opportunities in our conventional channels. And of late, over the last 2-3 years, despite COVID, we have managed to kind of sustain and maintain or better our margin in those individual channels as well. So as a composite portfolio, we have shown improvement on a sustained basis over the last 3-5 years in all kind of margin profiles, and we expect that going forward, as Nikhil has mentioned, we will kind of not only maintain our growth trend line, but we would also maintain our margin baseline, while the endeavor is to better all three aspects from here on.
Got it. And is there a possibility where you can actually drive much faster growth by increasing our ad spend? the ad spend currently at 6 and 6.5%, and let's say if you take it to 8 to 9%, because our operating margins are already at 22%, and by increasing the ad spend, can you you believe that you can you'll be able to improve your competitive edge in the market?
I mean, yeah, that goes without saying. Yes, and that's the reason why we have accentuated our ad spend by 2 percentage points, because we believe that creating aspiration is equally important as offering the best product value proposition and the best distribution network. So everything goes hand in hand, and that's why we are now focusing more on our ad spend increases.
Yeah. Also, you know, with ad spend, as we're increasing the demand offtake, we're also working parallelly very aggressively on our supply chain, you know, to be able to fulfill all of that demand. So that's a key priority focus, you know, going forward as well.
Got it. So what makes Campus a lot different, let's say, from other players, and what really keeps a management awake at the night, like in terms of competitive scenario?
So in terms of competition, see, there would be at least 100 or 200, I would say, private labels in a way. I wouldn't even call them brands. That's the nature of the industry, and they are basically segmented. These are very small regional cohort players. You know, they operate in a very small zone. And Campus is the only one, you know, the largest and the only company that is a true pan-India brand in sports and athleisure, you know, category. So there is no true blue competition for Campus. There is no single other brand that sort of competes with us in that sense. So honestly, like there's nothing really that keeps us awake at night from a competition perspective in that sense. We see a very good, you know, demand and also, you know, the brand equity has only grown stronger, much stronger in the last couple of years. So we really, in terms of competition, we are fairly covered. In that sense,
compete with ourselves.
And so, yeah, I don't know what else.
I'll just add to what Nikhil just said. We are fully cognizant of the fact that competition always exists, and if there are opportunities, if there are small pockets of higher margin realization opportunities, people would also come in and crowd that space. But at the same time, our endeavor is to strike a fine balance between our trend forecasting, our demand forecasting, our planning function, and sweating out or optimizing our vertically integrated manufacturing ecosystem, at the same time supplying the right merchandise at the right place, at the right time, and at the right price to our channel partners and end consumers. Keeping that fine balance in place is something that is our endeavor. And so far as we've been fairly successful in maintaining that, and the endeavor is to always strike that fine balance going forward.
Got it. And as Campus, as a company, you would be generating close to 125 to 150 crores cash flows every year. So what would your typical reinvestments look like? Would it be going to CapEx, debt repayments, or would it be coming out as cash to shareholders in terms of dividend payouts? What would be the reinvestment plan?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, as we generate, like we told you earlier, 55 to 60% OCF going forward, large part, I mean, certainly there would be some dividend payouts. We don't need all of that cash to be reinvested into the company. So that is quite likely, but we can't say it for certain right now until we generate the cash.
I mean, so long as we have growth opportunities available, we'll try to plow it back into growth opportunities and try and optimize the stakeholder returns to that extent. Giving you any guidance around dividend payouts would be premature at this stage because we have so much to do from here on, and everything sounds very exciting from here on from a strategy standpoint. We are not at liberty to share everything at this point in time, but in the coming quarters we'll be unfolding.
Sure. So as let's say the Campus, what kind of consumer advantage Campus would have? Would it like to be, let's say, a value player, or would it like to be a design player, where it keeps, where it's aspirational, but at the same time, the value is also lower in terms of it's a value aspirational buy for a customer. So where you would continue to keep your margins low and the competition stays away, what would be the proposition that you would have for the customer?
So you've actually nailed it in the question itself. While only one difference is there, we are not going to work on low margins. That's very clear. But besides that, certainly, you know, we want to be we want to provide the extremely high value proposition in all of our products, alongside, you know, being in the segment of, let's say, 700 to 3,000 rupees or 3,500 rupees, where this is, let's say, 85% of the market, addressable market. That's what we cater to. Right, so we certainly want to be, we are the largest, and we will continue to be, that's the endeavor, to be the large, continue to be the largest player in this segment and gain more and more market share there.
Sure. Best of luck. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As this was the last question, I now hand the conference over to the management from Campus Activewear Limited for closing comments.
Thank you, Diksha. It was an immense pleasure interacting with all of you. Thank you so much for taking our time to be on the call. And, you know, this was our first full year results post-listing. We are very, very excited for this journey and extremely grateful for the response we got, you know, during the IPO. All I just want to say is that, you know, we will make sure that we don't ever let, you know, your confidence and your confidence in the management and the team and the company down, right? So we are very fortunate to be part of this entire setup. So thank you so much for being here, and looking forward to interacting with you all again. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.